Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another Game of the Year 2017 episode. I'm one of your hosts, Cameron Kearns, here alongside my partner in crime, Will Turkhurst. Will, what's going on, man?
Not much, man. Vertical, got some coffee, so, you know.
You got the large one, too, when we went over there.
Hell yeah, I had two cups while we were there. That's equivalent of another two cups. Let's do this.
Man, I'm pretty sure if someone were to cut you, you don't bleed. You just ooze dark coffee tar.
First off, it's not tar, it's dirty water.
Dirty water, everyone.
Well, sure. Let's see. I run water through beans that have been ground. And then it changes the color.
And you somehow think that makes you think you're better than me for some reason.
I never said I was better. You just admitted I'm better.
Dang it! Oh, no. We're kidding, of course, guys. Thank you so much for joining us for our Game of the Year 2017 kind of talks, deliberations here. This episode is live on Twitch for all of our audio listeners that are tuning in and listening into this episode here. We're going to have a blast here. This is an interesting category. I think this is actually one of our new ones, is it not?
Yeah, probably.
It is one of our new ones as well.
That new hotness, you know?
Yeah, of course. Old and busted. New hotness. That's inside joke. You had to have been here like 10 minutes before the stream started in order to understand that reference here. But before we get into the nitty-gritty of going through our deliberations and whatnot, first we're going to give everybody the rundown. Because if this is your first time here, whether you're listening on audio podcasts or you're tuning in via Twitch, you don't know who is Rocket Punch. Well, Rocket Punch is this is the Rocket Punch cast, where groups of friends join around this table, talk about video games into microphones. For the entire month of January 2018, we're going through our Game of the Year episodes. Basically, what that means is we actually have 10 different categories. We're doing an episode for each category we have on there. They're going to be released throughout the entire month of January, so every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday of the month, you'll be able to catch a brand new episode of the Rocket Punch Cast Game of the Year, brand new category on each one. How it all works is that Will and I are here. We're going to sit down. We're going to go through our nominees in each category. We're going to talk about them, what's good about them, what's not great about them. And we're going to basically take those six nominees, whittle them down to three finalists that will walk into the winner's circle. And then from there, we must choose only one, the Highlander of the group, as you might say, to take home the glory of being a winner in the Rocket Punch Game of the Year categories.
To be honored amongst the Horde.
Or the Alliance. We're equal. No. Look, there's a clear line drawn here at the table, but we can at least agree for Azeroth.
Yes. Okay. Now, I do think it's funny that only one side is properly representing themselves as to who they are.
Look, mine was in the wash. Don't judge me. I got Reaper here. If you watch the Overwatch League, we had a lot of fun this week with that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if you want to be an edgelord.
He wasn't actually even used that much, but I digress. We're not talking about the Overwatch League. We're talking about Game of the Year. As I said, 10 episodes in total. Also, if you're tuning into this episode, if you're on twitch.tv/rocketpunchlive, but if not, if you're listening via audio, you can join us every Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Standard Time over at twitch.tv/rocketpunchlive. Tune in. We're going to actually stream a few of these episodes live. This particular one, we are streaming live to our Twitch viewers, so we're definitely going to be interacting with them in chat there. So welcome, Twitch viewers. Welcome, everybody listening via audio as well. If you want to keep up to date on all of our Game of the Year coverage, it's easy. Go to rocketpunchgo.com. That's the one place there you'll see our Game of the Year stuff right at the front. You'll be able to click that banner and look at all of our nominees, all the categories we're going to have, and all the winners we announce as we release and announce those. So rocketpunchgo.com, that's where you can go to tune in there. And also, if you haven't done it yet, go to rocketpunchgo.com, go to our Game of the Year page, go vote in our People's Choice votes, where basically all of our categories and nominees, you guys can make your voices heard and go vote in there for who you think should win in those respective categories. You can vote as many times as you want throughout the entire month of January. So that way at the last Sunday, when we do our official Game of the Year award, we'll actually be reading the comments and reading those polls from the voting there. So spread the word, tell everybody, rocketpunchgo.com, go there and vote, make your voices heard, guys. I think that's it. Did I cover everything?
Yeah, I think you got most of it there.
Okay. Most of it's good enough. I'm down with that. So let's jump in. Of course, two things before we get rolling and rocking here. Number one, if you're loving the content that we're doing here at Rocket Punch, just us two, you can always go to patreon.com/rocketpunch. Help support us as little as $1 a month. It's going to get you access to all the bonus episodes and cool stuff we've got planned. We've got a lot of cool, awesome Patreon stuff cooking for 2018. So you definitely want to get in on that action. Patreon.com/rocketpunch is the place you want to go. The other one as well, in talking about some of these categories, there may be points where you may have to spoil the story or spoil parts of the game for us. Don't worry, though. Will and I have committed ourselves to making sure that if that does happen, we will go ahead and say, hey, spoiler warning, just to give you guys a chance to maybe pause the audio or skip ahead a little bit. Or maybe if you're watching on Twitch, you can plug your ears a little bit here. I doubt we'll get into spoiler stuff here, but who knows?
Yeah, if you do hear us about to spoil something, you just plug your ears and go la 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 as loud as possible. And if you're in a room full of people, rip your headphones off, scream at the top of your voice, and then make some noise.
At the top of your voice? Does it have to be at the top of your voice?
Yeah, no. Like, it must be earth-shattering, and I need to hear it from all the way from El Paso.
Okay, wow. Okay, this is pretty serious then. Okay.
Yeah, right. No. I need the people who rage hardcore at fighting game competitions, I need them to weep in fear of your voice.
All right, guys. So now that we've got the rigmarole, we got the housekeeping out of the way, let's jump right into our category. This particular episode, what we're doing is we're going over the category for biggest impact. Now, last time I think we streamed an episode, we did biggest fail, I think?
Yes, we did.
It's interesting how this worked out. This is almost kind of like the flip side of that a little bit. What biggest impact is, give you guys a rundown on what we're looking for here. Biggest impact is awarded to a game for a thought-provoking, with a profound social meaning or message for the gaming industry. This is something that biggest impact is maybe some event or something in the gaming industry that may have kind of shaped in the past, in the present, in the future, how we view games, how we consume games, how we think about games differently. It doesn't necessarily have to be a large shift, but some type of meaningful shift in our gaming industry landscape there. And something that really, really tells a tall tale and that could change how games are viewed and made or whatnot or consumed for days, months, years to come. And so, with that being said, that's what we're looking for in this particular category here. So without further ado, our nominees for the Rocket Punch Game of the Year 2017 Biggest Impact Award are the Nintendo Switch Philosophy. We'll detail what we mean there. Ninja Theory's development in Hellblade. The mishandling of microtransactions. Nintendo's YouTube streaming policy.
Yeah.
PlayerUnknown Battleground as Game of the Year. And studio closures in 2017. That's a pretty interesting list. And people are like, oh, what does that mean? These are kind of vague here. Don't worry, we're going to go through each of the nominees, talk about what we mean, and then we'll get right down to the voting and figure out which one's going to come out on top here. So let's start first and foremost with the Nintendo Switch philosophy.
All right.
So, Will, what do we mean when we say the Nintendo Switch philosophy? What are we talking about here?
So essentially the idea that you don't have to have the most powerful console on the planet to be able to have a good game. And then you can literally take this non-ultra powerful console, pick it up, and walk to the toilet or wherever you're going to go and have that game continue with you like there was no change at all.
Okay.
Now, that also means that apparently it sells like gangbusters when you throw Zelda and Mario on it.
Yeah, it's easy.
And so that means there's more of them out there. And now the biggest question being asked every time a game comes out is, when is it coming to Switch?
Hit the nail on the head there, Will. Like, we're looking at, with this philosophy, something that it doesn't necessarily have to be the powerhouse. Quality matters, like, in how, not necessarily like it has biggest is best, but focusing on like what you're trying to accomplish and actually nailing that goal. Sometimes we think about that, we think of like gimmicky stuff. Example would be like the Wii
The Wiimote, yeah.
The Wiimote, stuff like that. But actually, when you're bringing that in, something that's actually going to be useful and innovative kind of at the same time in the industry. And actually, I mean, with that Nintendo Switch philosophy, that's really what we're driving home here. And bringing that up, we talk about the Switch. This was a big year for Nintendo. And one of the reasons was for their release of the Nintendo Switch. I mean, it really, there was a shift as far as what we thought as gamers, how a home console should be viewed. When we think about video games, we always think about the consoles and the handhelds. You got your Nintendo Game Boys over here. You got your consoles like your PlayStation, your Xbox, your GameCube, everything over here. And the Nintendo Switch was really the combining of the two. Having a console that's powerful and handles your 1080p games that you want for the most
part. Sometimes, like 720 to 960, 1080 can be an exception. But it's still good enough to be high def and look decent and not look like that's a jaggy mess of Nintendo 64 graphics over there.
Yeah. And really come out, take some of the lessons that they learned sometimes the hard way from the Wii U and really learn and pick up from those and say, look, this is what this is its ultimate form. This is its final form.
Correct. So to give you guys perspective, right now it has sold, as far as everything, just over 10 million units. That's as of December.
Okay.
So in the first month, it sold 2.74 million units on store shelves. That was March 2017.
That's not bad.
For perspective, the Wii U in the first 10 and a half months sold 3.91 million.
That's rough.
The PS3 in the first 10 and a half months sold 5.63 million. And the 360 in the first 10 and a half months sold 5.9 million.
And it really speaks a lot because, number one, this Nintendo Switch, with this philosophy and kind of how Nintendo approached the Nintendo Switch, they're completely trouncing Wii U numbers. Granted, that wasn't hard to do in the first place, but Wii U put Nintendo in a very tough spot.
Right now, at this point, they're outpacing every other console.
Yeah, they're tracking PS4 level numbers and almost PS2 level.
No, they're just under PS2 and they're outpacing the Wii. Which in the sold Wii, meteoric.
Yeah, the Wii, you know, you bundle in Wii Sports, boom, bada bing, bada boom. It really speaks to Nintendo to come from the Wii U and basically say, wait, let's take the Wii U gamepad and put the console in the gamepad, and then your console becomes the gamepad.
You're right. Now, here's the trick. Nintendo's planned production for the next fiscal year through March 2019 is about 30 million units.
Yeah. And that brings up another point as well with this philosophy is, I'm not going to necessarily say that they finally learned, but this year was a good one. Maybe learning from the Switch that when you have something that people want, you actually make enough product on it and you will sell it. You will make money. None of this false scarcity that we talked about earlier with the Wii and kind of that mentality that when it was on the shelf, you had to buy it. You didn't hesitate. You didn't wait for anything. With the Nintendo Switch, I mean, even now, I can go to the store and there's at least four or five on the shelf.
Yep.
Even a few months after launch, it wasn't something that you were waiting months on end and you saw one or two. After a few months, boom, they were on the shelf. They were available. And even when it wasn't as readily available, Nintendo was very upfront, like, this is a new type of tech. We're working with NVIDIA. Some of these parts are having shortages because of the iPhone. This crazy stuff that was coming on. But Nintendo was being very vocal about it. Back in the Wii time, they didn't say a damn thing.
No.
It was just, go get them if you can. Woo! And it was really just something. It's really show, and it's not maybe kind of wrapping it into the Switch philosophy as well as the Super NES Classic Edition. When that came out, we didn't know at first, but then they finally came to the point and said, okay, look, we're going to make a lot more of these. We're going to take the NES Classic. We're going to bring that back next year. We're going to make sure that there was enough available for people. And I still can't find those on the shelf.
No, we still cannot find a SNES Classic to save our lives.
Yeah.
Primarily because the minute people see them, they are gone. I mean, we're lucky enough we got our hands on them, but we still owe one to somebody, yeah. So we got to find another.
Incredible Threat in chat makes a very good point. In the Twitch chat, he says, the Nintendo Switch has reminded us all that the number of frames, or Ps, or Ks, doesn't have anything to do with gaming. It's a reset in thinking back to the days of the SNES. And that's a good point there. With a Nintendo Switch philosophy, it's not so much like, dude, it has to be the most powerful looking game. It has to be the most powerful console ever. 4Ks, 60 frames, right in your face, bleeding edge tech. It's something that, hey, I can take Doom on the go.
I can take Doom to the toilet.
I can take blank on the go.
I can take Skyrim literally to my lunch break at work.
Just write a game in there. And that really resonated and spoke a lot. Like, my wife is not a gamer by any stretch of the imagination.
I can vouch for this, yes.
I got proof. I got a witness. But when you talk to her about the Switch, she's sitting there like, oh, yeah, the Switch was a great investment at $300. Yeah, you can play on the console, but then if I want to watch something on the TV, he can undock the console and continue playing. I could sit there and play Legend of Zelda while Whitney's watching
whatever X, Y, or Z movie on Hulu, yeah, Netflix, or whatever.
Probably some Nicholas Spark stuff, foolishness. I don't know. But
look, it doesn't matter to you and me, all right? The point is, you can play the game, even if you're like, oh man, I'm really digging this boss fight, but I gotta go.
Yeah. But just imagine, think about how many people have been, it's at a point now, every time a new game comes out, the question on everybody's mind,
is it coming to the Switch?
And boom. Is it coming to the Switch? Can I get on the Switch? There were a lot of game decisions that we have made in the past year that were based solely on, is it coming on the Switch? Awesome, I'm getting it there.
Well, like Tiny Metal. You bought it on the Switch, which means I'm buying it on the Switch.
Too. I wanted to take that game to go because I remember Advance Wars and playing it on Game Boy System.
Oh, man. I cannot wait for Wargroove.
I got Stardew Valley on this. I waited until it came on the Switch.
You're a patient man.
For the third freaking time, I bought The Flame and the Flood on the Switch. And I love it on the Switch. That is a great game to just sit there and play. Oh, while you're in handheld mode. Mm-hmm. And you have all these smaller indie games going in droves to the system. And then you've got games like Mario Odyssey, Breath of the Wild, Mario Kart, ARMS, Splatoon 2. Like, boom, these heavy hitters landing on the... And you can take them on the go. It really was this mentality and philosophy that Nintendo had with the Switch. At first, people were like, I'm not sure about it, but I think it really kind of hit a home run.
Yeah, it's one of those where I definitely could see that this will change everything. Dude, even Bandai Namco is like, you know what? We'll put Dragon Ball Xenoverse on there.
Oh, yeah. Xenoverse 2. And yeah. I think...
I bought it again.
And what's even funnier, too, is that a lot of these indie games that are popping up on the Switch... Studios are coming out saying we sold more copies of this game on the Switch than on any of other console combined.
Oh, I guarantee you indies will be heading that way as fast as possible.
Oh yeah. And that says something as well to what Nintendo's accomplished with the Nintendo Switch and their philosophy behind it. And I think it's just bravo, Nintendo nailed it right out of the park, did a great job. I think everybody who has a Switch enjoys it. You go to GameStop, there aren't any refurbished Nintendo Switches.
Actually, there was one there today.
One? Compared to how many PS4 refurbished units?
Oh, a whole bunch. Yeah. And they had like a stack of Xbox One S's.
Exactly. So
the One S even.
Again, which means that there's really great, really big turnover rate on those consoles. That's
right. I need to buy that.
He's looking on the Nintendo.
I'm literally on the Nintendo webpage right now.
Picking games here. But anything else on the Nintendo Switch philosophy?
The one thing that has yet to be seen is their online service. Now, that being said, though, since they don't have an active solution, they have been letting everybody use it for free.
That's true. And so, I think that I'm curious to see...
I will say that's actually a nice strength. You didn't get anything like that from Sony or Microsoft.
And I guess in talking about this in regards to biggest impact, I'm curious with the Nintendo Switch... And this philosophy that Nintendo has, how this is going to carry them throughout 2018, how the rest of the gaming industry is going to view this and look at this. I remember when Capcom was like, oh, we don't know if it's really successful or not. We'll wait and see. 10 million units sold in under a year. Oh, yeah, we're definitely going to put our games on the system now. And this really, you know, one of the big things that people griped with the Wii U about was third-party support. Mm-hmm. And I really think that the Nintendo Switch is not going to have a problem with third-party support.
No, even EA in their limited foresight was able to put a FIFA game on there.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're one of the worst companies in the gaming industry. Oh,
man. It's a really good philosophy, and I think with biggest impact, I think that the Nintendo Switch really opened a lot of gaming industry pundits' eyes and gaming developers' eyes as to what it's like. Some people said in chat, it's not all about the P's. It's not about the K's all the time. It's not about who has the best graphics. Sometimes you just have games and you make a cool, innovative way to bring your product to people. And boom.
All I have to say is the funny thing. You know the console pushing the most P's and K's right now? The One X? How many Xbox exclusives came out last year?
Burn, man. Just laying it on there, huh?
Well, I'm sorry. For a console that supposedly has no games, apparently has more exclusives than Microsoft.
Ooh, burn. Man, that hurt. Man, we got to get off that one, man. That stings.
Look, I'm just looking at it as it is, dude.
The next nominee that we have here on the list is Ninja Theory's development on Hellblade.
Now, you've seen more of their Vidox than I have. Why don't you jump into this?
I'm going to dive in for this because people are like, wait, how is this a biggest impact? For people who don't know, if for some reason not listened to our episodes, we've enjoyed Hellblade very much.
You are selling it short.
And Hellblade, Senua's Sacrifice was made by a studio called Ninja Theory. If you don't know who Ninja Theory is, some of the old games they used to make that are pretty popular, they did the DMC reboot from a couple of years back. They also did, there's a cool little title on the PS3 called Enslaved, Journey to the West, which is basically like a retelling of the old Chinese parable of...
Journey to the West.
Yeah, of Journey to the West. It was really cool from the little bit of time that I know I played on it. Really great combat. But with...
Odyssey to the West.
Odyssey to the West, okay.
They also did Heavenly Sword.
Yes, they did do Heavenly Sword, a PS3 exclusive.
Yeah, I did not realize that was them. Mm-hmm. That game was solid.
And the reason that their development on Hellblade is specifically on the list of biggest impact is how this could reshape not only the indie space, but also the mid-tier market. When Ninja Theory came out with their plans to make and create Hellblade, one of the big, big driving points they drove home all the way until after launch, and even now, was that they were focused on bringing back the, for lack of better terms, the AA market. Basically, these nice, good, chunky, high-quality, AAA-like titles that are easier on the development budget, as well as easier on the wallet. You're not having to pay $60 for these full price games. You have these solid, you know, not these 40, 50, 60 plus hour sprawling adventures, but these nice 10, 20 hour high quality video games that look and feel just like you're playing a $50 million GTA game from Rockstar. And
yeah,
it really... They have a lot. If you we'll definitely link it in the show notes. But if you haven't had a chance, if you're interested at all, either in Hellblade or just in the development process of video games, especially indie games, one of the really cool things that they did was they documented their entire development process.
Yep.
From conception to even after launch. They did one recently that was a few months after launch. They have about 30, a little over 30 vid docs on their YouTube page that goes through everything with how their approach to it, their budget, the little pie graphs of their budget, what they did, who they brought on board, how they got some of the tech around them going, It was a very new way of approaching how indie game development goes. Some of the examples that I put in here as well. This was an interesting one that I don't think has ever happened. And they talked about they'd never happened before. There was a Game Informer article that they did for Hellblade. And Game Informer approached them and said, hey, we want to do a little piece on Hellblade. Mm-hmm. It was originally supposed to be like a 1 to 2 page piece. We're going to do much on it. The Game Informer guys came down. It ended up being like a huge cover story, like 10 to 12 page spread of Hellblade. Mm-hmm. When Game Informer came down to the studio over at Ninja Theory basically told all the staff this, and they looked at the Game Informer guy who was writing the article, and they said, look, you have full reign of the entire studio. You can go talk to whoever you want. You can go look at whoever you want to. If you any pictures and stuff you need to take behind the scenes, go do it. The reporter had full unfettered access to the entire studio to write this story, and that helped motivate him to make this like 10 to 12 page huge story spread on Hellblade. They made a custom front page cover for Game Informer subscribers.
Yeah.
And it was, for people who don't understand, like in the gaming industry, stuff like that, when people are asking you, hey, we want to do a cover for your story, they're not, you know, hey, we're going to force you in this corner. You can only see this much of the game. You can't see the rest of this. So it was incredible for a studio to give that much access to reporting on that game. Now, granted, I'm sure the argument can be made that, yes, it's an indie studio, so maybe they had to. I don't think they did, because there are a lot of indie studios that don't show their cards. I mean, all cards are on the table. There is literally nothing that he did not have access to. If he had a question about it, he went over to ask them, and all the developers in the studio were like, yeah, this is what we're doing, this is how we're doing it here, take a look at how we're doing this stuff here. And it was really something cool and incredible for an indie studio to, or just a studio in general, to actually give that kind of access, especially if it's a game that people are excited for, to go to the Game Informer cover and see that much cover in detail, to see, man, they're really going behind the scenes of stuff. Not only showing you how this game is being built, but also showing you how game development is done. It's not just, hey, here's a game, and then magic happens, question mark, and then profit, and then it shows up at your front door. Like, there are teams, usually hundreds of people, that are making these games.
No. See, all they do is they make it all on the computer, and then they export as .ps4. That's how it works.
Yeah, it's that's exactly how it works.
If you did it for Xbox, you just do .xbox.
Save as .xb1. Yeah, that's exactly how it works.
Yeah. Switch is .ninty or something, you know.
In an Incredible Threat Gaming in chat says, I love the concept of Hellblade, but I'm not sure I have enough insider knowledge in the game development to really know what sort of impact it had. I'm cool. I'm happy for them. I'm just not sure that one changed the landscape all that much. And kind of going through the details here, it's not so much the landscape. It's more on the game development side. Especially indie game development, they gave them full access to everything to write that story. So if you really want to know how they detailed everything, go find that Game Informer cover, that basically magazine issue that had all that content in there. The vid docs. Again, if you're interested in Hellblade or in game development in general, they go through detail. They talk about the specific playtesting they do with the patients that are living with mental illness every day, and how they brought them into the studio and did playtests with them. They talk about how they actually hired a doctor from the psychiatric study group company that they worked with to help kind of focus on the mental illness part of Hellblade. They brought him in. They basically more or less put him on retainer, and he was there with the game development studios and how tightly they worked with each other. They talked about, I put in here some of the tricks that they use. They talked about in their vid docs to how they save money. We've talked about it before. They initially, the actor who played Senua, Emelina Jurgens, she's the video editor for Ninja Theory. So all of the promo videos you saw, she actually had to do that. And they asked her initially, hey, can you be a stand-in while we look for an actress? And say, okay, we're going to do this. And they stood in, and she never acted before. And then what eventually happened is she started going, they decided, hey, I think a few weeks in, they said, hey, what if you just did this? What if we're going to offer you the job of actress for this? And her big thing was like, I want to be the actress, but I also want to do my job, and I don't know how that works. And she basically pulled double duty. When she's not acting, she had to go do video editing work. So a lot of the time she was still in her suit.
Yeah.
While in her mocap suit while she was getting video editing work done. But so, even just talking about her performance, some of the tech they used was brand new. When they, this is an indie studio, and you, if you've not played Hellblade, go watch the videos, play Hellblade, and then like watch these vid docs to see how this was made. They basically, they didn't have a mocap studio, so they took their largest office, cleared it out, put lights and cameras all around the studio and microphones in order to record her performance.
Right.
She didn't have, they didn't have motion capture software, so they had to outsource this brand new tech from another company to use on their cameras, and they actually showcased it off a lot of gaming conventions and whatnot. They, I'm trying to think of more of the stuff they did with her specifically. It was just something that was really incredible. And I mean, she had to basically work out and do a lot of stuff actors and actresses would do to get in shape for this. But not even just that, some of the trickery that they used in making the game, like some of the environment, they actually did some tricks to kind of stack the environment to make it look that good. It's not just like I take a code and I just paste, copy and paste it, but they did some cycle to actually show how they, how that environment stacked across like the grass and other stuff like that on the housing and whatnot. It, those vid docs are really incredible. And it's, for me, from 2017, it was really the first, like I said, like Credible Threat, I didn't know, I wasn't too far into game development. That really opened my eyes to not only game development, but also how Ninja Theory was doing game development differently. I mean, they literally have a breakdown in a pie chart like 60% of our funding came from in-house money. 10% came from this. 20% came from this. Another 15% came from this. They broke everything down for you. Like, if you wanted to know anything about that game in Ninja Theory, how it was made, it's available on their YouTube page. You can watch their videos.
Nice.
And it was, from a biggest impact standpoint, it was something that I would love. I don't, realistically, I don't expect everybody to do it, but I would love to see more studios take an approach, not necessarily every approach like that, but take a lot of risks and approaches to that, especially for not only indie games, but some bigger games as well, instead of necessarily hiding behind these shields and whatnot, because I think that's a two-pronged attack. It definitely gives people the chance to be more excited about their game. You know, what if Spider-Man came out? Insomniac came out. It's like, oh, look at all this behind-the-scenes stuff we got about Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And they showed more of how their guys are making Spider-Man and using some of the tech they have. Not only gets you more hype for Spider-Man, but it also gives, I use the term loosely, the uneducated gamer the chance to really learn and see what actually goes behind the making of some of their favorite games. And not, and hopefully, maybe, appreciate
the level of work that goes into it.
Exactly. And maybe be a little bit more humble when we're getting these games. And not necessarily giving, cutting game developers slack, but also understanding, like, man, I understand why this game is $60. I understand why Hellblade was $30. Like, all the stuff they went into, and that game was still $30.
Yeah.
Like, I would have paid $40, $50, even $60 for Hellblade. But that's me. But watching those, but that's also watching those video documentaries and seeing how what went into Hellblade, I was like, okay, I can see the work that went into here. I would have paid more for it. Maybe you watch the vid docs and you say, ah, I paid less for it. They didn't really do the work that I thought. But it just, that two-pronged attack, that could definitely have a huge impact on the industry if more indie devs and more devs in general can look at Ninja Theory's example and how they approached Hellblade and take some of those practices away to maybe how they develop their games and how they show that to the world.
Yeah, fair enough.
In rant. I was on a roll, Will. I was on a roll.
Are you sure about that?
I feel like I was on a roll, and that's all that matters.
I don't think you were.
But no, that's why definitely Ninja Theory, I think. I mean, any thoughts on it?
No, it's a cool thing. I like to see more about what's going on in the game dev world. But it's also, you know, hey, I get it. A lot of those people want to keep their names, you know, and faces and all that hidden as well. Because unfortunately, we have people out there who are also jerks and give death threats to people for no reason.
That is true. That is very, very true. Next up on the list is the mishandling of microtransactions. I'm going to drink water. You go ahead and get a start on this one.
So if you've watched or listened to our last streamed episode, which was Biggest Fail, I think you're aware of EA and the whole just cluster that they have caused this year. What was it? They had Need for Speed.
Yep. Need for Speed Payback.
They had obviously Star Wars. Yep. What else did they ruin this year? Because they ruined things in threes.
Was it the NBA games? No, that's,
yeah, no,
that's 2K.
That was 2K, but that was still a microtransaction problem.
Uh-huh.
Hang on, I gotta look.
Shadow of War, people had problems with Destiny 2.
That was WB, yeah.
Eververse, Call of Duty, World War II, although that wasn't as bad as some of the other ones, but people kind of griped about it as well. Honestly, by the end of the year, people just started griping about microtransactions in general, in my opinion. If it had microtransactions, they weren't happy with it at all.
I mean, let's just be real here. It is going to continue because, well, this is EA.
Yeah, but it's not even just an EA thing.
Oh yeah, they had some there was something in UFC, one of the UFC games.
But it felt like 2017 was just across the year and across the board a lot of developers trying these new things with microtransactions that never really hit it, never really nailed it, or never even got close. A lot of people had a. Now, granted, I think to some extent, a lot of the people, the vocal minority might have been like, it's just microtransactions in general. But that being said, there was still a large pool that was like, look, you're doing these wrong. In our opinion, we don't feel like we're getting a lot of value in purchasing this. You're kind of making us having to pay extra above our $60 price point. You know, on the one hand, people have to understand that game development is more expensive than ever. But on the other hand, when you get to Star Wars Battlefront 2 levels of scumbaggery, where you're basically nickel and diming your base that's already paid $60 or really $80 for the gold edition.
So funny enough, I found a picture the other day that described the level of scumbaggery. It was going to be over, 4,300 hours if you wanted to unlock everything when it first came out. Or just over $2,000 for Star Wars Battlefront 2. That's the level of scumbag.
$2,000? Are you kidding me?
No. And
like, first, where did they stumble? What is going wrong with this? Is it just people trying to be as... I gave the example. It's more or less, they're trying to push you as close to the edge as they can. And I think 2017, especially the last half, was when our feet were starting to slide off the edge. And we were like, no.
Yeah.
No means no. Get away from me. I want to get back on dry land here.
Yeah.
And it really was just so many people did not do it well. I mean, we talked about Shadow of War and the Orc DLC.
Yeah.
And the kind of debacle that was for a little bit. But they fixed it. They were able to resolve it. I mean, for the most part, most of these people resolved, whether by choice or by force, the issues that they were having with microtransactions. But it just...
Yeah.
It just doesn't seem that very many people in the gaming industry are seeming to get microtransactions right.
Yeah, it's a very, very thin line. And the ones that have gotten it right are like, what was it? Oh, what's the name of that game? They got a new league and everything. Oh, that's right, Overwatch.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, where it's like, okay, cool. It's skins for your characters. They don't change how your characters impact the game. If you suck, you suck. You can't pay to be better.
And people have generally not had an issue with Overwatch's practice to loot boxes. There were probably a handful of other games, I think, that a very small amount that people are generally okay with loot boxes. But then, the way that some of these companies are approaching loot boxes and microtransactions has really just gotten out of control. And I don't know what... Even at the end of 2017, I'm not sure what is going to be done to fix that, if anything.
Yeah, I'm flipping through all these pictures, and literally one of them is it's the Will Ferrell with his hair kind of up like this.
Zoolander.
Yeah, curb stomping EA is so hot right now.
apparently so. But we're talking about the biggest impact. So what do you think will, as far as impact?
This is going to have a massive impact on the industry going forward because everyone's going to be a lot more careful with how they approach this.
Do you think so?
I do, because it looks like right now even Bungie is looking at pulling back on Eververse.
Really?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Like, it's actually had an impact across the industry. Now, some of these newer games are coming out, and there's a lot less on that microtransaction front than there would have been.
You think so?
Yeah. So, now, that's not going to stop games like 2K, where it's like, hey, you want a haircut? Give me that coin.
And what's interesting as well, we've already heard that 2K and Rockstar have already said that the next Red Dead... whatever they do, they are, or not even just Red Dead, but a lot of their games going forward are going to include microtransactions because they've generated more revenue from those than they did from the base game. That being said, GTA Online, generally I've not heard any complaints or issues from people in microtransactions in Grand Theft Auto Online. And so could we maybe see Red Dead Online when Red Dead Redemption 2 comes out later this year?
I bet you we see a Red Dead Online.
And have microtransactions in there. I'm curious how people are going to interact and go with that on that front. But it's really just, I want to believe that from an impact standpoint, that a lot of devs saw, really the boiling point was the Star Wars Battlefront 2.
Yeah.
A lot of people saw that and saw what happened to EA and saw that Bob Iger came knocking on the door and said, whoa, you're messing this franchise up. You need to stop it. And they basically pulled back their entire microtransaction process. But what does that... Are devs really going to learn that? Or are some of these bigger developers still going to try and push a little bit?
Found the article on Rolling Stone. Unlocking all current content in Star Wars Battlefront 2 takes 4,528 hours or $2,100. Oh, man. I'm going to go ahead and post this in chat.
I don't have $2,100, so
I ain't got that kind of time either, man. I mean, look, I don't need a WoW 3, okay?
Yeah, we don't.
Especially when it's a game that's that thin on content.
But I feel like wrapping this topic up, because I feel like we've spent a lot of episodes of the Rocket Punch cast
just pooping on microtransactions lately.
Yeah, especially the last half of the year, and especially even the biggest fail episode that we did, we spent a good chunk of time talking about that. So definitely listen to that if you want more, or listen to our past episodes. But I mean, me personally, I'm kind of done talking about microtransactions.
No idea why.
Next nominee on the list, Nintendo's YouTube streaming policy.
All right. So I pushed for this one to be on here. And the main reason why was it's honestly... It's kind of weird considering how everybody else in the industry is, you know, embracing streaming to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. Nintendo has essentially gone to the point where it's like, you know what? If you're not on our list of pre-approved people, you can't stream. And even if you are, you still can't stream. It's got to be pre-approved, pre-recorded content.
What's funny is we just started talking about Nintendo and what they're doing with the Switch and their philosophies and thoughts behind that. And then we come back on the same list and now it's in a different context where it's like, Nintendo, what are you doing on YouTube? Now, for streamers out there, if you're watching and listening, one thing to note is, at least from our experience and what we've seen, if you're on Twitch...
You're okay.
You're okay.
Now, here's the trick. A lot of this stuff came out after the whole PewDiePie debacle where he started having the anti-Semitic statements and the racial slurs. And some of his stuff pop up.
Well, even then, even before that, there were some policies that began to be instituted beforehand.
Right, but I'm saying, like, the full, like, flip the switch, like, now it's only pre-recorded VOD we approve, we control the message entirely. All of that happened after the whole anti-Semitic thing with PewDiePie.
And I really think that it says something. I know Nintendo's gonna Nintendo, but it really says something when, as a studio, Nintendo is the only publisher, developer, whatever, that is doing stuff like this. When you talk, literally no other developers do it. There was the issue with, was it this year? Campo Santo?
Yeah, against PewDiePie.
In that whole deal, and they came out and said, we're going to put a strike on them. And
yeah, we will force them to be taken down because they don't want to be associated with them. And to be fair, they have the right to protect their content.
Yeah, and streamers tend to know this, but a lot of people that are watching don't tend to know the fact that if you're streaming the game, technically that's not
it's allowed. It's a legal gray area, but at the end of the day, the content holder has the right to protect their content.
And 99% of your content holders are okay with it because it's you're getting your content out there. Like, imagine if people who watched our stream were like, man, Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle, I don't know about that game. But then they're able to come and watch the game and say, oh man, that game's pretty cool. Guess what? That's not a Nintendo game. It's a Ubisoft game. So we can stream that. If people are curious about Hellblade, if they're curious about Astroneer and a lot of the games that we've streamed, you can go. We're in an age now where you can go. You don't have to watch these VODs on YouTube. You can go on Twitch, find a streaming service, YouTube Gaming, whatever. Tune into a stream and like actually hear live reactions, interact with the community, see what everybody else is saying about this game. If it's good, it's bad, if it's in, what's going on. And to have, like I said, 99%, but you've got Nintendo kind of sitting in the corner like, I don't necessarily say that you're not playing ball, but it says something when you're the only studio not doing this. And now granted, Nintendo may be relying on, we've got Mario, we've got Zelda.
Well, so actually, CTG over here points out something kind of big. Nintendo's YouTube streaming is no big deal, really. Twitch is a thing. Nintendo list of preferred YouTubers is a thing. Nintendo is otherwise killing it. Not to mention, Nintendo's always been protective of streams. Just cracked down a little further in 2017. Not big news. I mean, I agree with you to a point, but at the same time, I do feel like it's kind of getting ridiculous.
Yeah, sure, YouTube isn't as huge as Twitch, but there's still an audience there.
Yeah.
And this doesn't affect Twitch. To my knowledge, it doesn't affect Mixer.
Yeah.
Which is smaller than YouTube, and yet...
Well, but you got to remember the whole like YouTube Red is kind of changing that in a weird way.
Yeah, I don't follow YouTube Red all that much.
Yeah, I stopped.
Plus, who's to say that this doesn't come to a point where Nintendo starts to encroach on Twitch territory and says, no, you have to be a preferred streamer. We love our program. We love this 30% we're getting from...
Well, so here's the trick, though. Amazon would have to go along with that. And they're big enough in the digital space because they lease server space to so many people.
Well, the other thing is that
they could be like, no.
It's Twitch. If you screw Twitch, you got a lot of people, a lot of streamers, very upset. I mean, I remember when Angry Joe was like, I'm not streaming any Nintendo content. And he's primarily on YouTube. He's not on Twitch. Yeah. He has a lot of VOD content. Kind of funny. Those guys, more or less, are like, no Nintendo content. Unless they're basically paid by Nintendo to do it.
To be fair, though, I don't watch any of Kind of Funny stuff after Colin left, so...
Perfect. I'm just speaking about Kind of Funny in general.
I know.
Well, I love Kind of Funny.
I don't watch any of their crap anymore.
But I think that it's just... It's a precarious... You know, who's to say that... I think the impact as well is just... Nintendo, for all their big things that they did, they're still... I feel, in my opinion, some of those things that are being... that Nintendo's kind of holding themselves back. And I think that their YouTube policy and their YouTube tactics are one of those things. Because, yes, it is a smaller audience, but it is still an audience. In a sizable one, you've got a lot of YouTube content. Even if you take away the streaming part, the entire VOD process as well, which a lot of people on YouTube go to watch, is still being beholden by the fact that you have to be a preferred user.
Yep.
And when you're on that list, guess what? Nintendo gets about 30% of that cut.
I think you only get 30%.
Oh, geez, that's even worse.
It could be either way, but I mean...
Even worse.
It's not the worst offender on this list.
I'd agree with that. Next up. Oh, man. I need a drink of water for this. Yeah, get your drink of water, Will. Next nominee for biggest impact is PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds as Game of the Year. Will's like, I need all the water for this one.
I'll pick that up later.
I'm definitely going to say that... number one, PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. You probably heard of this game somewhere. It was one of the hugest phenomenons in 2017, gaming phenomenons that people have seen.
Yeah.
So is that the reason why it's on Biggest Impact? Yes and no.
That's not the reason why.
Well, it's one of the catalysts. The reason that this is on the list is that as of when we were putting this list together, before PUBG became a 1.0 release, at the literally last minute of December 2017.
Yeah.
One of the things Will and I started watching were a lot of just conversations about, oh, should PUBG be considered for Game of the Year? It's still in early access. You know, our cutoff deadline for IGN and Game Awards Game of the Year stuff is early December. What do we do? And there was this huge divide and kind of, I don't know, clash per se, but kind of battle in the industry space between like outlets purely on the fact that PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, it's an early access game. It's well, technically not
finished.
It was
at the time.
Yeah, no, yeah. Well, the PC version is not now, but it was at the time. It wasn't a finished product. And people were loving it. Like, literally, I think it's like up to 30 million people that have purchased the game on PC. Like 3 million concurrent players. Records are breaking all over the place. This was a game that at the time when people were talking about Game of the Year was not a finished product. And so people were coming in and there were all these cases for and against. Should PUBG be on Game of the Year? Should it not be? Why? Why not? What was going on? And it was just, it was really hard. I'll go ahead and give my thoughts on it. Probably, it's like, for me personally, if you've listened to these Game of the Year talks, you'll know. But for me personally, with PUBG at the time when it was not it was an early access, it was not a completed game, my opinion should not have been considered for any Game of the Year consideration because it's not a finished game. You don't have, what you vote on there may not turn out to be the final product. What if they make it worse? What if a feature you loved all of a sudden turns into something different?
Like a game-breaking bug.
Or just something different that you maybe didn't love as much. Or maybe you loved it more. Who knows? Maybe you give it a higher score.
Well, no, I was going to say, ultimately, the problem is it's not a finished product.
Yeah, and I think that was the big thing for us. That's why PUBG is nowhere in our Game of the Year award nominations, because by the time we built
this topic.
Yeah, by the time we built this list, it wasn't a completed game. That's the talked about it in one episode. I would have loved to put Astroneer on a list for best indie or unexpected gem or something.
But it's still an alpha.
But it's still an alpha. And I, like, by those rules, like, it's not completed yet. They made a huge change from pre-alpha to alpha. And I'm still trying to figure out if I like that. So going from alpha to beta, what if they make more changes? There's going to be more features added to the game that maybe I'll love it even more. And
it may make you hate the game.
Exactly. And that was the big thing behind PUBG. And as far as impact, and even, okay, from biggest impact, taking out the part that it came at a 1.0 release at the tail end of the year. We all know that happened. It's 1.0 on PC. It's still in early access on Xbox. But before this
I was going to say, another thing that, for a game to be Game of the Year, it's usually not just how the impact or the people playing it. It's usually, it's a technical masterpiece. It's setting and everything is
usually don't have problems with it and bugs. And at least from what I've heard about PUBG,
it was a buggy, non-optimized piece of shit.
I have a 1080 in my computer rig that we're streaming on right now, and apparently I heard that back in pre-release that game would not have run well
on a 1080.
When on Xbox One X systems, it was supposed to be enhanced, and I heard at launch in late December that the game didn't run very well on the console.
I'm not surprised. It didn't run right on a 1080 with what? You have a quad i7 or an
i5? i5.
All right, so you have an i5 with a 1080. And how much RAM?
16.
And it wouldn't run right on your rig. Why the hell would it run right on a home console?
And why this is on the biggest impact list is, in hindsight 2020, we looked at hindsight now, as far as I know, nobody voted or put this in a game as a Game of the Year winner. The Game Awards tried putting it in as a contender, as a nominee, which even then I had some issues with, but
yeah,
it didn't actually win.
Well, not only that, it wasn't a final like release until after the Game Awards.
Well, their cutoff date was like late November, so even then.
Yeah, I know.
But even, it did win best multiplayer game for Game Awards. In a couple of outlets, it won some smaller awards. I think PC Gamer gave it, or some, either PC Gamer or no, IGN gave it best PC game winner.
Which, what was it? Divinity Original Sin would have been a much better choice, but the second one or whatever that came out this year.
Yeah. But the impact there was just that, what would have happened if even one large outlet like IGN, GameSpot, because GameSpot basically said, we're not voting for PUBG at all. Here's why.
You know what? I got more respect for GameSpot than IGN at this like point.
Like Polygon, what if they had put PUBG as a game of the year over, in my opinion, the most incredible year we've had in gaming yet? Horizon Zero Dawn, Legend of Zelda, Super Mario Odyssey, Persona 5, Nier Automata. I'm hitting the bullet points. I'm going down like, and PUBG supersedes those as being game of the year. In at the time of when they would have been nominated, it would have been in early access. And that's the big kicker here.
Well, no, that's not just a big kicker, because it's also not a technical masterpiece. It's a buggy pile of shit. And I don't care what anybody says, you may have fun with it, but it doesn't mean it's good.
And beauty's in the eye of the beholder. And I well, understand.
I'm saying as far as a game, like a solid, like, look, let's put it this way. All right. Have you experienced any game-breaking bugs in Persona 5?
No.
Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild?
No.
Mario Odyssey?
No.
Nier Automata?
No.
Any other game you just mentioned?
No.
What games this year have you experienced a game-breaking bug in?
Well, Andromeda had the face stuff going on there.
That, but that wasn't game-breaking. That was an animation problem.
Yeah. I mean, there. I would have to think really hard about it.
Right. So, I bring it like this, is if it's not a technical masterpiece, and it doesn't have to be the most beautiful game in the world, it could be a Switch title. But if it can't run right on any of the hardware it's supposed to be released on, how the hell can it be the best game of the year?
Yeah. And it just...
That'd be like saying Batman Arkham Knight on PC was the best PC game of that year.
Well, and even more so, the impact, I think, when we were telling up this list was really coming from the fact that if PUBG, an early access game, gets game of the year, does that in essence open the door for other early access games to be considered for game of the year? So basically you're telling developers that you don't have to finish your work. As long as your gameplay loop is just great enough, you can supersede that. If you can sell millions of copies before your game's even done, you can supersede all that stuff and be considered or even possibly win the Game of the Year award. And I think that sets a bad precedent for the gaming industry and like gaming devs as a whole, to basically say, look, if our loop is great, we can take as long as we want to finish this game, and then we might win Game of the Year. We could still make a whole lot of money. I know Seth told us stories way back when, but like, think about if DayZ. Think about DayZ. It's early access game, still in early access, been there for years.
Oh, it'll never come out.
And because we know why. Seth kind of gave us the hint on why we think it is. And what if that's game that opens it up to all these games, especially when you have these games like Zelda, like Horizon, like Persona, like Nier Automata, that mm-hmm. are fully completed, devs spent years making, didn't say anything about it, finally released their game, games that work. And I mean, like 2016, we had a lot of problems with games that just didn't work. It had too many day one patches going on.
Well, not just that. Chris from CTG pointed out that you had that weird PS4 Pro Destiny 2.
Oh my god! Oh, and if it, like Destiny 2's like, we're going to be game of the year. No, you're not. Your game was broken for PlayStation owners for a month.
Which is your biggest for market. A month.
That's what your preferred console is. What you have an exclusive advertising deal with. And it just that.
Well, and it wasn't all PS4s. It just happened to be the Pro model. Your pro model, because my pro works.
But it was just, that's the impact. I know one of the things I focused on with this was that, could this have opened the door for more early access games to make a case, even just like, not even be considered, but make a case like, this is why we should be on Game of the Year list, but your game's not done. Your game could change at any point in time. And it, Credible Threat Gaming in chat pops up here with a good comment. In my opinion, PUBG was... It made an incredible impact in 2017, but I think that it is a single instance, not a trend. So the idea that it being an unfinished product and being considered for Game of the Year leaves much less of an impact than the immediate impact being made by the Nintendo Switch, for instance. It's just not a big deal compared to these other stores. And I agree with them on the point of just the fact that, again, hindsight's 2020. We look back now, PUBG got like a best multiplayer or best piece of game here or there, but as far as game of the year, no one's picked it at all. At least none of the major outlets have picked it. And so I think that for me, I feel great. Like Crisis Averted as well, but that could have, it didn't change it now, but it could still, it still kind of opened that door a little bit that if you have an early access game and it's good enough, selling millions of copies has this great boon, then you might be able to make a push saying, I want to be considered for Game of the Year. And I just didn't think that was right. And I think that that could have been a very dangerous precipice and precedent to set for the gaming industry as a whole.
Hmm.
All right. So, man, we're long-winded today on this one.
That's fine. Yeah, sometimes you gots to be.
Yeah, you're right. The very last one and biggest impact are studio closures in 2017.
All right.
Man, I feel like for this particular year, it has been a really hard year in games. It's particularly for studio closures here. It felt like every couple of weeks there was a studio closing or a team was disbanded or a game got canceled or something to that effect. One of the big ones, of course, if you know me, really hurt my heart. EA shut down Visceral Games, and who was not only made the awesome Dead Space franchise, but also was working on a Star Wars game,
yep,
single player game, which incidentally enough, a few weeks after they canceled Visceral, they picked up Respawn and they gave Respawn the rights to continue making that game. Coincidence?
Probably not.
Probably not.
I am kind of concerned on Respawn's prospects for long-term survival, though.
If they're under EA now, then they have nothing to worry about, in my opinion. But it, like,
are you sure about that?
Well, from a certain point of view,
I mean, there's a whole ditch full of dead companies that EA's closed.
You don't have to write. There are enough articles out there to talk about that. But so give kind of run through a couple of studios. Avalanche Software. They were, they got shut down back in 2016. They got picked up. They got reopened, thank goodness. Let me see what's up. Got up. There were so many studios I couldn't even remember. Visceral Games, of course. Perfect World Entertainment shut down Runic Games. They're the ones, if you've not played this game, Torchlight 2, the Torchlight series on PC. Yeah. It's like the cutesy kind of Diablo game. Very fun, awesome, very inexpensive Diablo clone-esque game. That got shut down. There were tons of other studios. I know the big one for in my mind was Visceral, but there are a lot of studios that really felt like they kind of got shut down and closed this year. And man, it just was, it was kind of hard. It was definitely really hard. It really made me question, like, as far as impact on the gaming industry, like, is there something that needs to change as far as how we practice and work with developers? Because if you don't know about game development, one of the things, if you're a developer, sometimes your life can be very tumultuous and very up and down. You could be working on a game for 2-3 years, and then when they're done with that game, they get it shipped out, they get all their post-launch content done, they could easily just say, okay, we're done, we don't need you anymore.
Yeah.
In order to reduce studio overhead and save money. And I think really seeing a lot of these studio closures come out in 2017 really begs the question, do we need to change how we approach game development as far as hiring developers and creating teams? Because there are very few teams that retain a lot of their staff, and they're usually the big developers.
Yeah.
And they're usually after everybody wants to rush in and try and get hired on those positions as well. Or on the flip side, why am I going to do that? I'm going to make my own indie studio, which has its own pits and perils in and of itself.
Yeah. Yeah, it does.
And it, like, that could be just as much of a drop in the hat as trying to go for one of these huge jobs in your game development space. I mean, then what are your thoughts?
I think it's a shame whenever we have to hear about something like that. So, yeah, it's a little weird. Visceral was a heavy blow.
It still stings a little bit. Still stings.
But, I mean, honestly, I'm not surprised with EA there. I do think that long-term, I think Respawn will end up being shut down.
Okay.
I do not believe that EA will keep any studio open longer than absolutely minimally required to get what they want out of it. Then they'll shut it down and move on.
You're not making money for us? And that's a shame to see that as well.
Well, the reason I say that is look at Ubisoft. They will have a studio and they'll be like, you know what? Assassin's Creed, you didn't do that well. It's cool. We're not going to close you guys and cancel the franchise. We're going to give you some extra time to finish it and make it right. And then we got Assassin's Creed Origins out of it.
Which is great.
But they're also willing to take risks and make a game like Steep.
Yes, that's very true.
And then they made that weird, like, Eagle Flight crazy VR experience bullshit. And you know what? I haven't heard about them closing any of their studios. It's just like, okay, cool. Well, we're just going to move on to other projects. They may not make money now, but our big AAAs make enough money to keep everybody open.
Yeah. So I remember another PlayStation, Sony Online Entertainment, or Interactive Entertainment closed Guerrilla Cambridge, which were the guys that made the Riggs.
Yeah.
The VR game there. So that was kind of sad as well, because I heard Riggs was a really good VR game for PSVR. It was pretty decent.
Yeah, but I mean, Cambridge is that was a weird one.
It was kind of like a kind of branch off there. But
what are you guys doing?
I really think that it was just really hard on developers, and particularly, and kind of maybe demoralized our devs in the industry a little bit as far as impact on the industry with just like, man, I felt like so many people were job hunting. Like, it got to a point where there were journalists that were like, hey, I have a Google Doc that has all the companies that are currently hiring. If something happens, go to that doc and they'll...
Actually, that's good on them.
Yeah. They're like, go see who's hiring there so we can get this out to you. And yeah. It was really hard, in my opinion.
I mean, it's tough for the industry, but sometimes we do also have to kind of trim things up before it'll start expanding.
Walks in Shadow has some, I don't know if I'm gonna read that comment, but they have some very strong opinions on EA. I'm gonna let that speak for itself here.
You know what? I won't ban you for that, but because I agree with you. I can't read that out though.
But I'm not gonna disagree with them on the EA stuff and the
no. In fact, all of that is entirely accurate. Walks in Shadow, thank you. Thank you.
So, those are our six nominees for Biggest Impact Award. Since we've been doing this now, any honorable mention you want to throw out?
Oh, man. Actually, you know what? It's an interesting thing, but I really do feel like the indie shift, PC to console, is going to have a big impact in the industry. I'm seeing more indies get their stuff on consoles now, instead of just PC only.
It's true.
And I do feel that will have long-term impact, where we'll get more people playing games that they never would have seen.
Well, when you don't make a proprietary cell processor that, you know, it's extremely hard to develop on.
Required a special, like, electrical engineering degree to be able to write code
for it. And you instead create an x86 architecture on your PlayStation or Xbox console that can easily be translated between PC and console. And then guess what? Well, you get a lot more games.
Funny thing is, PC or PS3 and 360 were both hybrid versions of an IBM PowerPC architecture. And the Wii was, and the Wii U were as well.
Right, I remember right? that.
So, in this gen, we had PS4 and Xbox One, dumbass Xbox name, go to x86, and Nintendo's like,
you're right.
Screw all that nonsense, we're going ARM.
You're right. But even then, ARM was based on a pretty standard... Switch was based on a pretty standard...
The ARM architecture is used in every cell phone out there, so there's plenty of people that know how to write code for it. I was semi-joking on that as far as banning you. I'm not... the only way I'm going to ban you is if you're harassing people on our channel.
Walks in Shadow, you're cool, man. Don't worry about it. Relax. Enjoy the ride here. He's like, okay.
No, man. We're just messing with you.
Welcome to Rocket Punch. But if I had to pick an honorable mention, I want to pick one this time. Let me think. I like the indie one as well. What was a good one? The It was an impact. I don't think it's a huge one, but I think I mentioned it once before. Like, the, if we remember, you know, regardless of thoughts on the whole Gamergate thing, whatever you want to say, like that a couple years back, but
yeah,
I remember pointing out off mic that we're now kind of from this year, we saw a point where we saw a lot of different type of games with different type of leading characters and stories. And I think a lot of that comes from some of that conflict back then.
You mean everything doesn't have to be generic white shooter, bro?
Yeah, exactly. Like Horizon Zero Dawn, Nier Automata.
You got to remember, though, a lot of these games are in development for so many years that this may just be coincidence with the whole Gamergate.
That's true. It feels cool. Yeah, like I said, it feels coincidental that we had that conversation, then like 2 or 3 years later, boom.
Well, because a game like Horizon doesn't happen in 2 to 3 years on the scale like that. It takes longer than that.
You're correct. It was actually like 6 or 7 years, something like that. 5 or 6, 7 years. But it's just really cool to see. You know, think about like 5 years ago or 10 years ago, like how games were and some of the games felt kind of samey, and now we're in from 2017. We really saw it was a point not only where there's so many different games that you could enjoy, but they were all great games. It was just like one. It wasn't just like the year of the shooters or something like that. Yeah, whatever genre you liked, you had a game for it. And even in like something that doesn't necessarily have to be the same protagonist, the same type of character structure all the time. They had a lot of, you know, you had your Persona 5s, but then you also had your Divinity Sin.
Yeah, which is totally different.
Totally different. You had your Zelda Breath of the Wild, but you had your Horizon.
Yeah.
And you had your Neo, but you still had Bloodborne and everything back in the day. And I think that was really cool. I definitely give a shout out to kind of seeing how the gaming industry has matured over the past, even just 2017 and just past years before that.
Yeah.
Most definitely. Walked in Shadow, I'm looking forward to that game as well. I'm very excited for that. So now that we got our nominees on here. Now we gotta find out who's in the winner's circle. This is the point, guys, where we're going to take our 6 nominees. We're going to pick 3 of them that end up in the winner's circle. From that winner's circle, we will pick 1 game to rule them all as the winner of Biggest Impact Award. Oh, good, because I'm out of water. So, we're at 6. Now we're at 3. Now we got to make it to 3.
All right,
what are your thoughts?
First to die would be the YouTube streaming policy from Nintendo.
First to die.
Yeah, first to get kicked off the island, you know. I don't think that it had enough of an impact to overshadow. Okay, Walks in Shadow, you came in late. So, these are our...
Well, did not list the categories?
Yeah, so we have the Nintendo Switch philosophy. So as far as this goes, like the idea behind how the Nintendo Switch has changed the industry. Then there's Ninja Theory's development on Hellblade, Senua's Sacrifice. Then the mishandling of microtransactions. Nintendo's YouTube streaming policy. PUBG is other gaming outlets' possible game of the year. And then followed up with studio closures in 2017.
And don't worry, Walks in Shadow, if you came in late, if you're into it, you're coming in late, do not worry. We actually will repost this episode on our podcast feed. You can find it on our website at rockpunchgo.com. So that way you can hear kind of like, what are we at, like an hour and a half now? You can hear the entire conversation and what we talked about on each of those nominees. So don't worry if you missed any part of it. You'll be able to jump back there, as long as all of our other episodes as well that we have on our website.
Yeah, because we're actually doing an entire series on our game of the year, so we're breaking it down. That way you don't have to sit through a 10-hour discussion of him and I arguing back and forth over what game is better.
And help out our Twitch viewers that are popping in late as well. I'll give a rundown as soon as we're done kind of getting the votes here. Kind of give people an understanding there. But so I'd agree. YouTube streaming policy, that can go. I wasn't really like, okay. There are stronger contenders on this list.
I would agree. So how about you? Take a shot.
Let me take one. I think the studio closures in 2017 can hop off.
Okay.
I think that while that was impactful, I don't For good or ill, I think that that may be just a nature of the business. And I don't, I would love for it to change. I would love for game developers to have stable jobs all around and they could find a studio that they love and enjoy working for and not necessarily be in fear of, oh, we ran out of money, or, oh, we're only keeping you for a year, et cetera, et cetera. We know you moved all the way from New York to California for this job, da, 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 da. But I feel like that's kind of like a nature of the business and being a game developer. And for aspiring game developers now, it's kind of something they have to look forward, to, quote unquote.
Plan ahead, plan for the worst, and hope for the best.
Exactly. But I think that studio closures kind of pops off the list here.
Yep. So, if it's going to come down to all of this, I'm honestly going to have to say, as awesome as the Ninja Theory's development on Hellblade is, I don't think it makes it in the top three.
Okay, well, why not?
So, I don't think it's as impactful as the Switch philosophy. Just on the basis that, yes, it's awesome. It's an amazing way to document the process behind it for them. However, it's one of those where developing a game isn't necessarily that different. Now, I say that because it's like, okay, cool. So they did their Vidox on the behind the scenes. We've seen a lot of behind the scenes Vidox and different things, and they did some cool things with this. But, I mean, we've seen some stuff from Blizzard, and we see their guys behind the scenes every once in a while. We've seen stuff from a lot of other things, and yes, each studio has its own take on how they process through this. And they did have a unique take on it. I just don't think it's necessarily game-changing. I think it's game-changing for them and what they'll do in the future. I don't think it's game-changing industry-wide.
That's interesting. I totally, respectfully disagree with you on that one. Just because I know I've watched a fair majority of those, and I know their aim and their entire goal and the reason they actually tell you, the reason we documented it is for everyone else. Not for them, for everyone else. For everyone tuning in and watching, and that was their reason for driving home the point of like, hey, this is how we want to document this process, so in the hopes of hoping other people can learn from this and find different processes and ways to build a better game and have a better process with you on that one. What are the other ones we have? PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds is Game of the Year, mishandling a microtransaction, then Nintendo Switch philosophy.
So
it would be a toss up between Ninja Theory's Hellblade development and PUBG as Game of the Year.
I like Ninja Theory over PUBG
because here's my thought.
No, I'm saying getting into the final three because PUBG annoys me. Just based on the sense that, like, you know what, screw PUBG. I don't want to get anywhere in here other than the fact that their picture was used.
I think us viewers, people watching on Twitch, listeners on audio formats are not going to disagree that number one, the microtransaction one is in.
Oh yeah, microtransaction hell is here to stay. Don't you worry, guys.
Especially after the huge impact that Star Wars Battlefront 2 had on the industry. Like when CNN Money is paying attention to your stock prices of a video game, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
That says something when normies are paying attention to it.
Yeah, I mean, whatever. Normies can look all they want. They'll look away, and then it'll continue to be a trash, unoptimized piece of garbage.
And I think the Nintendo Switch philosophy, it's just that the Nintendo Switch in and of itself was just a new revolution for Nintendo and the gaming industry as a whole, and really rethinking, not necessarily a handheld console gaming portfolio, but also just rethinking what a console can be and what the home console system can look like. And who better than the guys who mastered the portable market, and they know very well how console markets work. So I think Nintendo Switch philosophy stays. So if I'm putting it down on the table, I'm saying that the Ninja Theory's development on Hellblade and PUBG being voted by other studios as Game of the Year walk into the bar,
and PUBG explodes in the doorway.
And it's like,
and the Ninja Theory guys sit down and have a pint.
And just if I definitely would have this conversation, if I'm picking between the two, I think that Ninja Theory's development on Hellblade, I think, will be more impactful because it will not be as forgotten. I think as the year progresses, people are still going to enjoy PUBG, but now that it's in a 1.0 release, people have forgotten the whole early access and the huge debacle that that came with. And I think history will remember PUBG as just that awesome game that sold $30 million copies as of now, and is now the current record holder for most concurrent games on Steam and everything like that. Not to say that that impact isn't heavy, but I personally like Ninja Theory's impact on their documentation of their development better.
All right. Well then, so the final three are going to be mishandling of microtransactions, the Nintendo Switch philosophy, and Ninja Theory's development on Hellblade.
Here's what, I'm reading some of the, I'm reading Walking Shadow stuff in chat. Active on Point Stream was crazy because it even did, like, man, Walking Shadow, we're going to be very, very good friends.
Yeah, you feel free to come back whenever you want.
But yeah, no, Winter Circle, as Will said, repeat them again for us.
All right, so mishandling of microtransactions, Nintendo Switch philosophy, and Ninja Theory's development on Hellblade. Yes, those are the three finalists for this category.
That's in the Winter Circle, but now, who takes home...
Who gets the one ring?
Yeah, the one ring to rule them all, as we like to say. I'm going to be honest. Ninja Theory, I think, deserves to be in the top three, but I do not think it is as impactful as the other two on this list.
Oh, you and I both know the answer of this.
I don't...
No, dude, the Switch philosophy is the only correct answer. I don't care who the hell you are. No, that is the best answer, bar none. I'm sorry, what? I have a home console that I can carry in my back pocket. Yes, I have big back pockets. I also have big cargo pockets. I can throw it in my cargo pocket. I can throw it in my Switch backpack. I have a Nintendo Switch backpack that I carry every day. Are you kidding me? There's no way that I can't bring Mario Kart to your house and be like, yeah, we're just going to sit here and play Mario Kart. We're totally good.
You can take this game and bring it home.
Yes.
It...
This is where I put my Nintendo Switch if I had one. Oh, wait, I do. No, but seriously, the fact that I can take Legend of Zelda everywhere, and it's not like Minish Cap or you know, Spirit Tracks. It's proper, full-featured, home-release Legend of Zelda.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, hey, I'm sorry. What? What's the first thing whenever a new game... When they announced Dragon Ball FighterZ, what was the first question everybody asked them?
It's coming to Switch.
Yeah.
It's coming to Switch.
When they announce any game now, what is the first question it's asked?
Is it coming to Switch? What about that Switch copy? Come on, where's that?
Dude, it's so popular, they put motherfucking Doom on Switch.
We allowed to say it? Yeah, we can get one every hour and a half, something like that.
Yeah.
So we're cool. We're cool. We can drop it.
No, but I'm saying they put Doom on it. They put Skyrim on it because you can't kill that game.
They're bringing Wolfenstein 2 on it.
Yeah, Wolfenstein's coming along. Let's see. What else can Bethesda shoehorn into this so it's a buggy pile of crap? No, even Bandai Namco's bringing games to it. So it's like, you know. Even Capcom is having to reassess the fact that they brushed it aside at first.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, yeah, real quick. I think the point... This is a point I didn't bring about the Nintendo Switch philosophy, but funny enough, this year has really taught me, and a lot of pundits have made this comment as well, is that it seems to be that whenever Nintendo does well, the industry does well. Think about when we had the Wii U's back in the Wii U era, the dark times.
Actually, the PS4 succeeded pretty well.
Yeah, but then you had the Wii U wasn't doing great, your Xbox One was... That early message on was kind of but even then, like PS4, we were getting into points of, oh, PS4 still, never mind, they were doing pretty well.
No, you know why? Because when everybody else is out there in La La Land focusing on, ooh, TV, and their console is going to be the next cable box and all this other crap, somebody's like, this is how you share games on PlayStation.
But now, well, I'm just saying,
they focused on the games first, and it's showing now. They're in the 70 plus million sales. There, the Switch is selling like gangbusters because why? Does it have anything other than Hulu, which took like 8-9 months to get onto it?
No.
No. It's got games.
And it
over 100 games.
What's funny is people gave that the Switch so much crap because it wasn't going to have those apps. But we talk about, like, you've heard the expression, the high tide lifts all ships.
Yes.
And the PlayStation wasn't doing that, but when Nintendo got off the Wii U funk, They came with a Nintendo Switch. Now, your Nintendo Switch is trending better than the Wii. PlayStation sold over 70 million copies. They're trending better than the PS2. Your Xbox One is gaining more ground, especially with the reversals that they've done with the Xbox One S.
They may actually hit 40 million consoles sold.
I don't know. They don't tell the numbers anymore. But even that with the Xbox...
I'm kidding.
But with the Xbox One X is the most powerful console ever. And a lot of innovation, a lot of movement back to what gamers care about. Surprise, it's games. And that, I think, was extremely... Cause again... This year, when Nintendo does well, the industry does well. Yeah. Period. PlayStation, Xbox, and Nintendo all had great years. Gaming as a whole all had great years. And I think with all this being said as well, microtransactions, I still am slightly concerned. It had a huge impact with Battlefront 2, but I don't know if it's really going to change people's mind. It's going to have that much of an impact.
So you know how microtransactions will stop, like, as far as actual effective change, when people stop giving them money for them.
Hey, again, what was it? It was biggest fail. Remember this, people watching, remember.
Vote with your damn wallet.
Star Wars Battlefront 2, everybody hated the microtransaction. Remember, it was scummy. It was horrible. Guess what? November 2017, the biggest video game sales month of the year. Guess what was number 2 best-selling game across all video game consoles for the month of November 2017? Star Wars Battlefront 2. I'm just saying, you don't like those microtransactions, yet people continue to buy the game and support the dev.
Yeah, because a lot of people see the Star Wars logo and they're like, oh my god, I need that.
But I'm going to vote for Nintendo for all the reasons I've talked about, but also, I'm just going to toss it in there. I'm tired of talking. I'm super tired of talking about microtransactions that make me sick to my stomach. Nintendo puts me a smile on my face. I want to go play Flame in the Flood on my Switch.
No, we need to play Tiny Metal.
Play Tiny Metal on my Switch. I want to do that.
I need more indie games. Now, the only thing that would make my Switch better is if I had a proper virtual console.
One can dream. 2018, yeah. Your dreams.
Yeah, right.
Maybe you'll get the virtual console, and maybe I'll get that Final Fantasy VII remake in Kingdom Hearts 3 that I've been waiting for a good while.
Those are pipe dreams.
Your dreams, baby. Your dreams. Yeah. No. So, with that being said, I think we're all in agreement. The winner for Rocket Punch's Game of the Year 2017 Biggest Impact Award is the Nintendo Switch philosophy, with the mishandling of microtransactions and Ninja Theory's development on Hellblade rounding up the winner circle there. Not bad. Round of applause.
Yeah. Good on you, Ninty. Good on you.
Good job. So, with that being said, that is the end of this episode. As I promised, I'm a man of my word. If you're just tuning in, you're jumping in late. Basically, this is Rocket Punch. What we're doing is we're going through our Game of the Year episodes all throughout the month of January. You can catch new episodes over on our podcast feed or audio service of your choice every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday of this week on iTunes, Google Play. I think we're on... Are we still on... What was the third one? Stitcher. No, they're all over the place. People are drawing our feed like hotcakes. But every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, we will be releasing a brand new episode. We are already released about half of the episodes already.
By the time this goes on our feed on Thursday,
we will have about half of them done.
Yeah.
But you can also go to rocketpunchgo.com and go to our Game of the Year segment to find all of those as well. But how it breaks down, like it said at the top of the show, we've got 10 episodes, 10 categories. Each category has 6 nominees. As you just saw, we take those 6 nominees, we talk about them. Then between Will and myself, we whittle those down to the winner circle of 3. And then we pick one to rule them all as the winner for that award, with the other two just being finalists in that winner circle as well. And that's our big Game of the Year stuff. As people that are watching on Twitch, remember, every Sunday night this month, at 8 p.m., come over to twitch.tv/RocketPunchLive. We will be streaming one of those episodes from our Game of the Year talks live. I think next week, I believe, is Developer of the Year.
I believe you are correct.
And then the last Sunday in January will be the big one,
Game of the Year,
where we finally make our pick for which game is the king of all, the king of all cosmos.
When we actually bestow the crown upon the true and rightful heir to 2017.
Yes, very much. But you can always go, again, to rocketpunchgo.com, go to the Game of the Year banner at the top. You can click that. You can see all of our nominees, follow all of our coverage on Game of the Year. You can also go vote in our People's Choice forums. If you go to that same page, rocketpunchgo.com, you can go vote for all the categories we're talking about. You can go make your voice heard, vote in those categories, tell us what you think should win our categories, and what you think is your personal favorite Game of the Year and why. We'll be reading those on our final Game of the Year episode at the end of the month. And you can vote as much as you want to. It doesn't have to be once. You can vote as many times as you like, because of course you might have more than one favorite game of the year. So you definitely vote for those. We're definitely excited to read all the ones we've gotten so far out there. Is that it?
Yeah, man, that is.
What is he wait, this is a big deal.
Yeah.
This is a big deal.
That's why I said welcome to the party.
Yeah. Walks in shadow. Can we verify this? We're live on the mic as we're doing this.
Let's see.
I gotta click the big refresh button here. I didn't even know we were up that high yet.
Oh, from what I'm seeing, hang on.
Yes, confirmed. We now have this big deal for us at here, Rocket Punch, doing the streaming thing for maybe a couple of months now. We are now at 100 followers on Twitch.
Say what?
That's right. Round of applause here. Yeah, no, we're not as cool as some of these guys, like thousands and millions of followers. But you know what? You guys are important to us. We really appreciate you guys following us on Twitch. We appreciate everything you guys do. We hope to continue to bring you more content on Twitch and via our podcast later on in the year. Hopefully you guys enjoy the Game of the Year stuff that we're doing here. But that's it for this episode.
Yeah, that's a wrap, man.
That's all, guys. Thank you, everyone in Twitch, for tuning in and watching today. Thanks, all audio listeners, for tuning in via podcast services around the globe. Really appreciate you guys' support. We've still got a lot more Game of the Year coverage, so don't go anywhere. See you next time.